try, 'cause they can only love you from yesterday. I'm looking at the now, they pose high, 'cause I'm just a man who's walked.
What up, this is Jay-Z. When I'm flying through Canada, you know I'm checking out CKUT 90.3, you heard?
This is Phone Doc.
And this mess stinking.
When we ain't chilling up in the bricks in the Shaolin, we chilling out here in Montreal.
On CKUT.
Nobody do it better, dog.
90.3 FM. Gone.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Feet that's in my blood, like the lotus I grew from the mud, yeah. Manifested by design, finally free from the lies, yeah. I got my elders here with me, keeping my eyes on the truth. They watching like it's a movie, from the top of the hills I bought on me. I done had an epiphany, chakras aligned, stars in the sky, steady protecting my energy. Facing my demons one at a time. Fuck it, I'm coming through, young, black, gifted and beautiful. Fuck it, I'm coming through.
Number one select. I like lipstick on my neck. Hands around my waist, so you know what's coming next. I wanna feel your lips on mine. I just wanna feel a little tongue. We don't have a long time. Ooh, you're talking nasty and I like it. Whisper in my ear, only me you can hear. I seen it from the back and I'm excited. Tell me what you do when we walk up in the room. Try it. Find me on my neck and you know what's coming next. We can make a movie, I can ride it. Let's just make a move, baby. 'Cause for your love, I'll take my time. Just wanna feel your hips on mine. I really got a thing for my lipstick lover, 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 lover. I'll do anything for my lipstick lover, lover, lover.
I like lipstick on my neck. Leave a sticky icky in a place I won't forget. I like lipstick on my neck. Baby, I'm obsessed. Give me undressed.
I got evolution in my vein. I'm gone, I've been far away. I'm a
stone. I feel it coming in, I feel it in my bones. Heaven.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is joining us all the way from New York, New York. Her name is Mia V. Prizer, aka MVP, and she is a New York-based artist, producer, model, burlesque performer, and breast cancer survivor. She has been performing and producing professionally in New York City since 2011. Mia, thank you so much for being here with us this evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Actually, I was producing in 2009. Just to let you know that much.
You know what? artists tend to like shorten their resume. I'm sure if you go back a bit further, you'll find other things that you were actually producing that you probably don't ever want to see the light of day.
I feel like it's so hard with time and shows, you know, they seem to run into each other.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure you're right. It is. There are shows that I've done much earlier than that, but I'm proud of them all.
Okay. Okay. That's good. That's good. That's good. So how did you, so you said that you're a burlesque performer, you're an artist, producer. How did you come to, because the way that I know you, we met back in 2011. So, way years ago, as I like to say in Jamaican terms. And we met at what was called the Freak Nasty at the time, then changed to the Freak Spot, Sweet Spot. And I met you as a burlesque dancer. And I feel like that was in your first year of performing burlesque.
It was my first year of like doing shows that weren't my own. So I'll start from the beginning. I'm from the Bronx. I did my undergrad at CCNY, and I was in the theater department.
Okay.
And while I was in the theater department, I started working in costumes. I started like working in behind the scenes in shows and taking acting classes. And I met people there, and I started a small troupe with a few of the girls that I went to school with. And so we used City College to like rehearse, basically.
Okay.
In the beginning, we weren't like showing, we weren't taking tops off or anything like that. It was very like vaudeville. And that was 2008, 2009. And then from there, I started to produce little shows outside and little shows in Harlem.
Okay.
And then while I was producing, I started inviting in more established burlesque performers. Aquino's, I don't know if you remember Aquino. She's also a performer at Freak Nasty.
Yes.
Did one of my shows, one of my early shows. There was another one, Calamity Chang, did one of my shows. And once I started working with them, I started to see like more established performers, see like how it was done. And they also started to hire me for things. So I started to branch out from my burlesque troupe and perform on my own. And I would take little breaks from performing on my own and then put up a show.
Okay.
That's just always how I've been.
So would you consider yourself primarily a producer first and then a performer or vice versa?
I'm both. I produced shows so that I could perform in them.
Yes. Yes. That's I know why exactly I what that is.
And I wanted to like put my friends in things and people that I thought were great. That's what I wanted. I still want that.
Mm-hmm. And you said that originally, was it always kind of this vaudeville burlesque style that you were interested in performing? And what attracted you to that?
Well, I mean, I started as an actor. Mm-hmm. I was in a play. My friend did a play called Closer.
Okay.
And one of the main characters was a stripper.
Okay.
And she had the scene in the play where she wanted it to feel more like a burlesque show. And that was when I first discovered that I actually had an interest in burlesque.
Okay.
Like for myself, I always loved like gypsy, you know, I didn't know anybody else besides like Josephine Baker and Gypsy Rose Lee.
Yes.
And, you know, people don't really think about this as burlesque, but the movie Flashdance had a very big impact on me.
Right.
But that, to me, that's burlesque as well.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you've ever seen that before.
Which, what, Flashdance?
Yes.
A long, long, long time ago. I don't even like know if I don't less... even know if I was allowed to watch it at the time.
Oh, probably.
I may have been just a little bit too young when it came out. So I guess the question is what is burlesque for those of the listeners who may not necessarily know?
It is the art of striptease. Mm. It can be funny. It can be serious. It is performance art.
And because when people think of stripping, they automatically think of like a raunchy crowd of drooling men and like money flying on stage and stuff like that. But that's not really like there might be a raunchy crowd just because of the partial nudity that burlesque does have within it, but it's very stylized.
Yes.
It's not just about taking off the clothes. It's
storytelling.
Mm.
You know, well, like a stripper, I think that's still storytelling, but it's a different type. Like I've done burlesque in strip clubs before.
Right.
And to me, it always feels weird.
Why does that feel weird?
Because I feel like that's a different domain, you know. I think that like a stripper in a strip club, the dance is like a go-go dancer.
Right.
It's a performance, but it doesn't necessarily have a beginning, a middle, and an end in the same kind of way that a burlesque act does. Like a burlesque act usually ends in pasties, so there's a button on it. Like that's the end of the story.
Right.
Like, I don't know. That could be the bra coming off. That could be twirling tassels. That could be a drop split. That's the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a strip act could go on, like a stripper could go on for a while.
20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't, the story is much more stretched out, not like a burlesque act.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I really appreciated about you, because you're very active on social media and you speak out a lot again about the mistreatment of artists. What was it that made you decide to speak out on that? Because like I think you've mentioned, you know, that you're at the risk of being blacklisted and things of that nature when it came to speaking out about things. What made you decide, you know what, I'm going to speak out because of XYZ reasons?
I feel like if I don't speak out, then things just perpetuate. You know, in the beginning, you speak out and people are like, oh, wow, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And then it happens to them. And then they get together with
right.
you. Sometimes. Sometimes people just like keep to themselves. Once I started to talk about things that I've experienced as an artist in New York City, I feel like people have reached out to me privately and say, yeah, me too, with this same venue or this person. And it's like, well, these things perpetuate if we don't say anything. But also, you could say something and end up not getting booked,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then what do you do?
Yeah. As a producer, that is one of my reservations, because I told this line of like, because I started off doing erotic shows, doing erotic poetry shows, much in the same vein as the Sweet Spot, but more towards the poetry. And then in the latter years, we started incorporating burlesque into the shows and that sort of thing. But one of my concerns was always respecting the artists, because like the first one, it was just like, oh, I just want to do this show and explode onto the scene. And then my artists would come back to me and be like, hey, I got people like asking me to do to say poems and while them and their partner are having sex and soliciting me and all that kind of stuff. And so it became like a heightened awareness of like, okay, I need to protect my performers while they're in this space that I have curated, and uh-huh. also I need to treat my performers with respect as well. Like, there are uh-huh. so many different levels to think about, you know, and especially when we're talking the adult entertainment industry, uh-huh. it can be very dangerous navigating those waters with people who...
In the beginning, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were things that I agreed to when I first started that now I would never agree to. I would never allow.
Like what, for example?
Like working in a place where you weren't sure if your bag was safe or where somebody might walk into the dressing room, or like having your butt slapped when you get off the stage. Some things you can do something about, and the rest of it is like, one of the most important things to have in a burlesque show is a great host.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The host is going to control the crowd and give them the rules. You have to give people rules.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they don't know what to do. They don't know what you are. And some people are going to do stupid things anyway, but it's up to the host and the producer to like set the parameters, like just to make sure that things stay fun.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets home safe. I mean, in the beginning, it's hard to know that, but it takes time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you gotta ask somebody, you know?
Say again?
You gotta ask somebody.
Right.
You know, when people try to book me for private gigs, I have a blurb of all of the things that I ask them, like, where is the show gonna be? Is there a safe place for me? Can I bring a friend? You know, all of the, like, where are people going to be in the room? Someone going to be able to like make sure my stuff is all right? These are like all the questions you need to ask, because it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Being a performer, I think it could be dangerous. I have been very lucky. I haven't had like a lot of crazy stuff happen to me because I think that of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm usually working in venues, or I'm working with a producer or someone who's booking me out, who already knows the rules, who can kind of protect me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Aside from making sure that you're safe and that your bag, you know, like your belongings, and you have a safe place to change, what are some other rules just generally that you always make sure, or a checklist that you always make sure you have when being booked for shows?
I ask about transportation. I want like my car fare covered. I want to make sure that I get paid by a certain date or beforehand. And for the most part, like a clean, safe place to get ready.
Mm-hmm. I remember that you spoke a lot about payment, about artist payment.
Yes.
So tell us from the perspective of like someone starting off, and like what you learn, like some of the mistakes that you made and what you figured out in terms of how we get rules is that we come in and we have a general like, oh, I'm an artist and everything's gonna be okay, but then we have to like, oh no, these rules need to be set in place. So
yes.
what were some of the mistakes that you could share with us that made you know, okay, I have my checklist and you need to check all of these boxes before we can start working?
Okay. I once showed up at what I thought was the call time. Meanwhile, the party was happening 3 hours later. So I ended up like waiting around. I didn't have all the information in the email from the person who had booked me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, this is a lot of my time here. And I'm getting kind of tired, and I'm going to have to go on in 3 hours. But it was too late to like cut out of it.
Yeah.
I've done gigs where I've been told there was a place to get changed, but it was really more like a closet. I've done shows where I was promised certain things and they weren't there, like the sizes of the stages or like music setup. You know, the same old nonsense that people put you through. They might not give you the full story before you get there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
No, like, or having a song start right after my performance and like someone needs to pick up my costume, like trial and error.
And that's the difference between being in a space that's specifically for burlesque and being in a space that someone hires a burlesque dancer. Because I've worked in and attended burlesque shows at one of the very few burlesque dedicated spots in North America, the Wiggle Room here in Montreal. And it's also, I think, one of the only woman owned spots as well. And there's like we get the rules from the owner. The owner comes on stage and gives us the rules. The general rules and opens up the show and also tries to get the audience hype, and you know, because there's an energy aspect to it as well. You can't just be sitting down and just with your hands folded and, you know, giving a little golf clap. There needs to be like an encouragement, holler. You know? And there's when I've hosted shows there, I've hosted burlesque shows there, and there's what we call a Miss Kitty that will walk around and dressed in like a kitty costume with the ears and the tail and everything, and she goes around and picks up the costumes. And me, before I started working with like specifically the burlesque shows, that's not something I would have ever thought about. You know, that's not something that even came to mind. And then I was like, yeah, that makes sense, because somebody can walk and slide on it. Even a regular performer just coming to do poetry steps on the stage and whoop, their feet are in their air.
For time and money, those things like rhinestones, somebody sat and stoned all of that. Those things are sewn. You know, also, you don't want your stuff taken. It's happened before too. Like somebody might steal a glove if you don't have, we call it the stage kitten.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what we call it.
Yes.
And then they'd go and they get the glove. Somebody in the audience is like, hold, you know, you might throw your glove at someone, but you want it back.
Yes. You touched on the costumes. Again, this is only what I've seen and heard. Most of the time, from what to my knowledge, the artist makes their costumes.
If you have those skills, yes. Mm-hmm. I don't 100% have skills to be making my costume, not the stuff that I want. Right. I make my little hair hats and things like that. I can like whip stitch something. Okay. But it is, unless you have like major skills, most people are having someone make their costume. Okay. Or they're finding things and they're like embellishing them and making them better.
Right. And what kind of investment can one perceive? You're laughing already, sir.
A lot. I mean, if I want to give you like a low cost price for feather fans, we could start at like $700.
Woo.
But I got to tell you, my fans have made me much more money than that. They made me a lot more money than what I paid for.
Okay, so the investment is
worth it. Right. It is so much worth it. And like, I use them all. Well, I'm taking a little break from fans, but I was using them every single day. So it's worth it.
Okay. And so the deterioration is not as, it's not as quick. And like, you don't have to worry as much about deterioration.
You take care of your stuff. Yes, things do deteriorate and you like get things jizzed up and you know, have feathers added or have stones added or fix the stabs or whatever. You know, I have a corset right now that's been like broken for a while. I finally sent it to be fixed. But, you know, you have to keep up with your stuff.
Right, because this, it's just a part of the game. There's going to be some damage that happens, and you just...
Awesome. Yeah. You know, and then sometimes you might find things that are vintage.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wonderful on the stage, but you have to, like, get those repaired and get those things taken care of.
Regularly.
Yeah.
And on the higher scale, what can how much can a costume cost?
I think people pay from $2,000 to almost $10,000 for costumes.
Lord have mercy. That's a year's worth. That's a year's worth of rent.
But you know, you can have a fantastic costume and end up in a gig that pays you incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I think costumes get you gigs. I know that's sad to say,
right?
And it's a bit, you know, it's a thing. It's definitely a thing.
Yeah. I was watching a documentary. I don't recall the name of the documentary. It's on Prime. And it was recounting several different strippers that went to Las Vegas for the first annual, I think it was called the G-String Awards or something like that. And the diversity in terms of like the costumes and the people, I was blown away. Like, some people were even constructing sets and having the sets brought in to these competitions, and it was a quote unquote stripper awards, but there was a high element of what I would perceive to be burlesque in it. Did you catch wind of that documentary?
That sounds very familiar, but I can't.
Done in like the 80s.
It might have been. So maybe it was an early burlesque pageant.
I don't know if it was. I think it was specifically. I think it was specifically for strippers because there were no pasties. And I think that is one of the huge differences between burlesque and strippers is usually you can see a lot more with the strippers.
I've done burlesque acts that have been. There's less places to do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you like go to the box.
Right.
You could see a burlesque act that ends nude. I think even the slipper room.
Even the where?
The slipper room. I think you can do that there. I don't work there anymore, so I don't know.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are joining us for the first time this evening, we are speaking to MVP, aka Mia V. Prizer, who is a New York City-based artist, producer, model, burlesque dancer, burlesque performer, and breast cancer survivor. And we're talking to her about her life's journey as an artist. We do have to take a quick break. Pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Whose data? Our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Kumbit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at kumbit.org or email at info@kumbit.org. That's KOUMBIT.
Them a man clowns and me walk on them. Me no love chat but me a want them. Tell them this a real Sheng Yang anthem. No girl can't see me as a problem. Them a man clowns and me walk on them. Me no love chat but me a want them. Tell them this a real Sheng Yang anthem.
Now fight no girl over no man, me no idiot. If me a take your man, me a keep that. Them a fi see me in a street and pass and whisper to friend if a she that. If a girl touch me, me
nah say me nah be that. But if me a take your man, me a keep that. She a fi see me in a street and pass and whisper to friend if a she that. The big bad and brave, so me beat me chest. No girl can see me and try text it. The bitch woulda stick, so bring her to the vet. Sheng Yang stamp it in a chest when me step. No fight over man, me the stress over you. Some girl head full of ear like parachute. When me and him par, everybody say we cute. She turn a navigator and take another route. Now fight no girl over no man, me no idiot. If me take Jordan, me a keep that. She a fi see me in a street and pass and whisper to friend if a she that. If a girl touch me, me nah say me nah be that. But if me a take your man, me a keep that. She a fi see me in a street and pass and whisper to friend if a she that. When cocky good, baby you a fi share it. But me no care once me a him favorite. Me good pussy chip cocky and tear it. Send him a yard after so you repair
it. Peter, Jack Frost, I got no room to make you mess with my headspace. Get up this morning, I'ma feel great. Can't please everybody, then we still here. Guess who are them biggest enemy?
Toothpaste.
Cause we are making money, haters, them pissed off. Stir fry whenever you see them rich walks. Say them a chopper, but you can't trick me. Fraud love, call my name, that mean me, I got lip long.
Touch is coming in for getting traction. Hey, chip dog, I mean fracture. Full of mouth, panagram, no action. Them bad, yes, but only ban TikTok. I got no room to make you mess with my headspace. Get up this morning, I'ma feel great. Can't please everybody, they will still here. Guess who are the biggest enemy?
Toothpaste.
Room to make you mess with
my journey.
Your business don't concern me. You can't see my joy, you're a birdie. You know, see me out like furnace.
Help Kevin, with certain people, you're not gonna see me laugh up. Got betrayed many times, so I'm very cautious. Rise from nothing, everything was all good. Till you see your ex girl and I'm a Benz park up.
Give me brain and out of mercy of these. Text our mo, come back, please. They should block him from every platform. Then me tell him this when him call me.
I got no room to make you mess with my headspace. Get up this morning, I'ma feel great. Yeah, please, everybody, they were still here. I swear to God.
Anyway, trouble is, they don't love me anyway. Don't get my feelings hurt, I know the ceiling's gone. Don't get my feelings hurt, this time I'm not the one. Don't get my feelings hurt, don't say I'm not the one. Don't get my feelings hurt, I'm a vibe out today. I'm a vibe out today. Away. I'm a vibe out today. Away. I'm a vibe out today. Away.
Yes, yes, yes. We are back. We are back. We are back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this evening we have Mia V. Prizer, aka MVP, who is a New York City-based artist, producer, model, burlesque performer, and breast cancer survivor. She has been performing and producing professionally in New York City since 2011. Mia, I am so grateful to have you here with us this evening in Montreal. Is this your first time in Montreal, quote unquote?
Yes, it is.
I remember a while back, I have a friend who is a burlesque performer, and I went to her place and she had this huge poster of burlesque performers. And right at the top of the poster was Delicia Lachette.
Oh.
I think I had taken a picture and I sent it to you. I was so excited. I was like,
what is that?
How? Because that was your original pseudonym, Delicia Lachette.
Yes.
And I think it was a competition, if I'm not mistaken. Because there are burlesque competitions.
I did the New York Burlesque Festival when I first started out. That's the first and only festival I've ever done.
Okay. So that must
have been it. Oh, I also did Miss Coney Island
mm-hmm.
when I was starting out, yeah.
Okay. How do there's a lot of competitions, burlesque competitions.
Mm-hmm.
How have you participated in any of them?
No.
No. Well, let me tell you something. People know you. Because the burlesque performers up here, I mention your name and they're like, oh my God, yes! MVP, I know her, yes! So Montreal, you got quite a few fans.
Montreal.
Yeah, we got to bring you up. We got to bring you up.
I know the scene out there is awesome.
It is. It is. It is. So have you ever... Okay, maybe you didn't participate, but have you ever gone to a burlesque competition to watch or to judge?
No.
No?
I have a thing about that.
What is your thing about
that? I have a love-hate relationship with things like titles and crowns and stuff like that.
Okay.
My mother brought up something to me today when I was talking to her about why I said I didn't want to go to art school when I was a kid.
Okay.
I said, I don't want anyone to tell me how to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
While I agree with that statement, yes, you could still take classes. You still could do that. I started burlesque and I wanted to just do it. I didn't go to the school of burlesque. I didn't have anybody teach me. I just did it. And I didn't want to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to things like competitions and winners and losers, when it's something like burlesque, which is such a personal thing to me, is that's like my healing.
Yeah.
It doesn't sit with me.
Right.
But it's cool for other people to do that, because I think it's actually helpful for people. You know, if you're really going to go and do these competitions, it gets you seen, you know. A lot of you get a great video. You meet people. I think it's good for some people. I just think it's just never been right for me.
Mm. Yeah.
I think I'm too sensitive.
I feel the same way about slam competition, slam poetry competition. But I just go in and I murder people with my poetry. So I'm just like... I went back for the first time in like 10 years last November, and my best friend was there with me, and he was like, Kim, this wasn't even fair. This wasn't even fair. Like, I practically heard Muhammad Ali in the background going, the champ is here. Another thing that you were very outspoken about, especially within the last 2 years, is your journey with surviving breast cancer.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you about that. Like, as a burlesque performer who, you know, your body is kind of your art, and it's kind of, in a sense, the way that you make an income, and being diagnosed with breast cancer, like, how did that affect you in the beginning, in terms of like, you have this disease in your body, and you have to figure out, you know, what you're going to do and how you're going to move forward?
Well, I was having some issues before I found out I had breast cancer. I was having like physical issues, like I was having anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a seizure.
Oh.
So I had stopped working. And I didn't know what was going on. I had been getting tests. Nobody knew anything. And then I went and I got my mammogram. And then they saw something, did a biopsy, told me it was breast cancer. And then everything moved on from there.
Okay.
It was really weird also, because I was about to turn 40. And it was like the first time that I was really appreciative of my body. Not to say that I haven't been in the past,
mm-hmm.
but I was like really proud of it. And things that I used to nitpick about myself, I was learning to love them.
Okay.
And then this happened and I was like, wow, it took me a while to like get here, and now I'm probably gonna lose this. And, you know, I had already experienced breast cancer via my mother.
Okay.
Mother had breast cancer twice. And my older sister had breast cancer. She found out before I found out.
Okay.
So it was already like lurking in the family.
Mm.
Not to say that I knew how to deal with it, but there were things that I did know how to deal with.
Right.
But you learn as you go. You're never really going to be prepared for cancer. I don't know.
Yeah.
It did make me start drawing again, which is something that I have been doing on and off. I've been a visual artist since I was 3 years old.
Okay.
And I usually have these moments where I stop. It's usually because I'm doing something else like theater that I stop drawing.
That you stop drawing, yes.
And I get really into it when there are times when I can't do much. Like when I had my double mastectomy, I could barely lift my arms.
Wow.
I had to depend on my husband to do everything. And I'm a very independent person. And what I ended up doing is just getting back into my sketchbook.
And how did you being a very independent person kind of impact, you know, and now you have to be very dependent. How did that impact you mentally, and how did you kind of have to shift your thinking in order to move forward?
I had to learn how to let my guard down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn how to delegate as opposed to just doing stuff. And I also had to learn how to like let people help me.
That is something I've been hearing people, especially women, say a lot nowadays. Like, I need to just let somebody do something nice for me. You know, because it's not the end of the world if I can't cook my own meal today and someone else does it. Or it's not the end of the world if I ask someone for a favor and they do it for me. You know?
Yeah. It's the fear that people aren't going to.
Where does like, that come from?
About cancer. That's the thing about cancer too. Like, it brings everything that was bothering you about yourself before is like glaring.
Okay. Okay.
Shit you thought you got over, it's like, I'm back.
Nah, you didn't quite get over that. You swept me under the rug, but you didn't vacuum me out of the house. We gotta deal with this. And since you had your mastectomy, I believe you had a couple of the surgeries after that, and now you're back to modeling, and you're back to burlesque dancing again.
I am. I actually had two surgeries. It was a two-part thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the safest way to do that. They used to do them all in one swoop.
Right.
Which is the mastectomy, and then they have to make sure that your skin heals before you can get a reconstruction.
Right.
Have breasts again. So, and that is its own surgery. I did that one in October. So
October I've been of what year?
2023.
Okay. Well, the second surgery.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. And all of this happened for you during the pandemic.
No. This happened. This
is right this on the happened. End of it.
This, my diagnosis was April 20th. It was 420. That's when I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Okay, 2020 you were diagnosed. 2023. Oh. Okay. It felt like a much longer time. I don't know why I thought it was much longer ago.
No,
it was just now.
It was just now. It just happened.
I feel like I had contacted you I thought I contacted you in like
2020. You're thinking that's when I stopped calling myself Delicia LaShot.
Oh.
And I deleted my Instagram page and I was like, I'm never doing this again. That's what happened.
I'm conflating different things. Yes. A lot of changes happened because of the pandemic.
Like, oh, we're all going to die. I got to get off the internet. That's where my brain was. But I started drawing and painting then. That's when I was like getting into my stuff again.
Yeah. And how how has your drawing and your painting evolved?
I think there's more depth to it now. I don't even like to compare them. Mm-hmm. It's just different phases of me. Like, I always go through certain periods. Like, there was a time when I was just doing charcoal.
Okay.
And I was like obsessed with doing charcoal. And then I was just doing collage. And then I started to really like using mechanical pencils because, like, it doesn't take up a lot of space. You could just keep going. You don't have to keep sharpening the pencil. Mm-hmm. And I could just do that right on the couch.
Yeah.
I spent most of my days on the couch with my cat and my dog and my husband in the kitchen. And that's what my days were like. And going to the doctor, come back, sit on the couch.
And how was your mental health?
It was rough.
Mm-hmm.
It was rough. And I think that I'm doing better now, but I have my moments.
As I believe we all do, but it's definitely heightened because of what you went through. Did you get a therapist in order to accompany you? Okay.
I found this amazing therapist on Talkspace.
What's Talkspace?
It's like an online app that allows you to find a therapist. Okay. Pay out of pocket for it. Okay. And you can like tailor it to, I sound like a commercial right now.
It's all good. If it helped you, then maybe it'll help someone else.
So they sponsor me if they want to.
Right.
It was great. I found, like, I put in my criteria, what I was looking for, and they matched me with this amazing lady who helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And was taking care of your mental health something that you thought a lot about before your diagnosis, or was it something that, you know, your diagnosis came and then you were like, this needs to...
I've been going to therapists since I was in college.
Okay.
Like, on and off. I feel like there's always like, all right, this is something rough going on and I don't know how to deal with it and I need a doctor to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get what I got to get and I don't see a therapist. I work on it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I meditate, I work out, whatever. And then when something happens, you got a toothache, you have to go to the dentist.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we said a bit earlier, you're back on the burlesque scene.
Yes, I am.
What's different, or how have you evolved your practice? I like using the word evolve because it's not a comparison. It's like you were here at one point and now you're at a different point. How has your performance evolved from before and after?
I feel like I used to move around a lot more as opposed to like taking my time with things. I think my style changed. Okay. Part of that is like physically I had to change. And then I think I just started to take my time a little more and be more in the moment and less worried about what people think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm worried. I care what they think. I want them to like me. I'm not crazy. But at the same time, I'm like, I like myself enough that I want you to see me liking myself.
Yes. you mentioned earlier, I believe before our break, the first break, you mentioned Josephine Baker.
Yes.
And I'm going to be presumptuous and say that she has been a huge inspiration for you throughout.
Big inspiration.
How, what made her such an inspiration for you?
Well, she has been my inspiration since I was a little girl.
Mm.
I used to love old movies, like black and white movies with the hair and the makeup and all of this stuff. Which every time I would see a black person in one of those movies, they would be looking, they might look gorgeous, but they have to act a certain way.
Yeah.
I was up late one night. We had HBO for the first time.
Right.
And this movie came on with this black woman, and she had her breasts out, and she was dancing, and she was moving around. It was Lynn Whitfield and the Josephine Baker Story.
Okay.
And I watched the whole movie, and this was the first time I had ever heard of her or or seen her. I never knew that a Black woman had lived like that and had done so much before my time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that there was such a thing. And it's like, oh my God, I want to be like her. I want to be her. That's how I felt when I saw that. And it wasn't until years later that I like thought about her more, like when I started doing burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started, I was looking for more Black burlesque performers. There weren't that many of us.
Okay.
There were not.
And why do you think it's important to find other Black burlesque performers?
Because you need to see yourself. You need to see diversity. You need to see not just Black burlesque performers. You need to see fat ones. You need to see Asian ones. You need to see different kinds of people doing the thing, because they all come to it with different stories.
Right.
You know, I remember going to shows in the beginning of this and only seeing white people on stage. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I know we here. There was Brown Girls Burlesque. Mm-hmm. You know, there's Pearl Noir.
Mm-hmm.
There. But there weren't a lot of them. You know, there's Main Attraction. You know Main Attraction?
No.
There's no Main Attraction.
I'm not that deep in the burlesque scene. I just have a few people that I follow.
That's people. Another Josephine. She came before me.
Mm-hmm.
But like I feel like she just calls us into it. She just keeps calling us.
Josephine?
Yes.
To be unapologetically you. One of the things that I was fascinated with, I don't know if I read an article or I saw a story, but Josephine Baker's activism and love and care of people continued way after her career. She ended her career as a performer. I found out that she had basically like a, I don't know if it was a chateau or, she had, yes, a huge mansion with something like 20 children or something like that. You know, and she married a duke or it was really, I was like, this, where is this movie of this part of her life? Because we all know the...
Have you seen that Lynn Whitfield movie?
No, I have not.
You should watch that movie. Mm-hmm. She's due another one. Josephine Baker is due another movie.
Yes.
And it needs to tell the full story. I have her son's book. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I didn't meet him. He passed before I could meet him.
Okay.
But my husband met him and got his book autographed.
Wow.
And that's the book that he gave to me. And he grew up, like he was 14, I believe, when she adopted him. Mm-hmm. So he knew Josephine like at the end, and what she went through and the debt she was in. And, you know, it was pretty tragic. And then someone helped her. And then she did her last show. And
yes.
She was like 7.
Yes.
And then went to sleep and passed away.
And she never woke up.
Great show. Sold out show.
Yeah, that was... I remember that. And I remember thinking to myself, that is like probably the best way a performer can
to go out.
You have an amazing show, you fall asleep, and it's literally roll credits, you know?
Please.
Literally, you're rolling the credits on your life. One of the things that one of those stories that I was fascinated with is how much support she gave the troops during the wars. That was something that was fascinating to me, because I always, and especially now with our history and with what's going on in Palestine and Yemen, war for me, and I have friends who joined the army, and I meet people who have been in the army, and they're not necessarily like, hoorah, but they are.
Yeah.
And it's such a conflict in my mind, because it's like, what are you defending? and she lent support to the troops, which I find to be something that's completely fascinating, because yeah. one of the discussions that I've been having is art is in everything, and without mm-hmm. art, without art, there's nothing could possibly exist, you know.
Right.
This bottle of computer cleaner is an artistic piece, you know.
Yes.
And so to use art in order to bring light to soldiers during a time where they do not know if tomorrow they'll be taking their last breath is something that is truly honorable and beautiful.
Yes, it is. Those must have been great shows. Those must have been the best shows.
Yeah.
So appreciative.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are joining us for the first time this evening, where you been? You got to tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM at 7 p.m., okay? We are speaking to Mia V. Prizer, who is an NYC-based producer, model, burlesque performer, and breast cancer survivor. We're getting the behind-the-scenes of this amazing artist. And, of course, you know, it's Radioland, so we got to play some bills. We got to pay some bills, play some music, keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
The words mental illness. What do you think?
I have friends who don't even know that I suffer from depression.
Why don't they know?
Because I'm scared they'll ostracize me if they know, and then they'll abandon me. I don't want to be alone.
You're discriminated against when you have a mental illness. With other illnesses, there's compassion.
It doesn't take much to be diagnosed mentally ill.
Due to an outburst, I was diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. And now the doctors say it's something else.
20% of people and counting have had or will have a depression.
People throw different labels around. You are this or you are that.
Everybody psychoanalyzes someone during a conversation.
You have a right to express emotions.
Anger, love, hate, sadness, confusion. It does not mean you're ill.
If you're down and out, seek help. Don't be scared. It can be very intimidating.
There are people listening and willing to help.
We have to innovate.
Get informed. Contact your local CLSC, Sun Youth, Amy Quebec, Ford House, or Prevention Suicide. Hi-ya. Hi-ya.
Tell me why you're crying, how can it be you? When you gave me something, I don't really feel. But you knew that already. When I found you on the ground, you were dying. Now you coming to my yard uninvited. Can you see me on the edge? I'm enlightened.
Back of my head,
just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can while I can for my people. While the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night, that's when I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom calling, calling me to answer? Gonna keep on keeping on, I can feel it.
Cause you moved mountains, I can't do the same. And did you think about that when you left us? I know it's selfish, but I can't help it. If I fall down tomorrow, then there's no one to blame. Water under the bridge, let it burn like a flame. You're not here and it kills me. I'm not numb to the pain. Now there's blood on my hands. Guess what, one and the same.
Imagine if I needed some advice you never gave. Imagine if I end up on a path you never laid. They say you're hearing spirit like I'm meant to let it fade. Life gave me lemons, I can't make it lemonade. Blood on my hands, but for you it's NFA. I would've went myself if you never led the way. I would've held your hand if you needed me to pray. Hindsight's a bitch, I can't look her in the face. Pain in my heart, but I'll put it in the grave. Pain in my soul, but I'll put it in the grave. Nowhere else to put it, that's the way that I was raised. Would've took a bullet if it meant you could've stayed. It's like they overcharged on the price that I paid. Left it broke, so I charge it to the game. As long as I'm alive, I'll be carrying your name. They never cut you out the frame, but
who do I turn to when I need saving? You move mountains, I can't do the same.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this evening we have Mia V. Prizer, aka MVP, who is a New York City-based artist, producer, model, burlesque performer, and breast cancer survivor. She has been performing and producing professionally in New York City since 2011, and beyond, actually, as we found out during this interview. Mia, I am so grateful that we were able to finally coordinate and have this interview. I've been wanting to interview you for a while, so I'm glad that it finally happened. Even if it's 2024, better late than never.
Yes.
What are some things that you believe artists need to know when getting into any form of artistry professionally?
What do they need to know? They need to value their work. They need to value their work.
And how do I came up with like kind of like a formula, but how do you come up with the formula for how you're going to put a number? Because that's what it is at the end of the day. We do live in a capitalistic society that, you know, you have to put a number to whatever it is. How do you put that number to your art?
Well, it depends. Like, you know, how much does it cost me to get where I'm going? How much does it cost me to I mean, if you're talking about performance, that's different. Art and numbers, I'm always confused by that.
Okay.
But performance, I always just put in, like, how much is this going to cost me with my time, my energy, my costume, my body, my spirit? Mm-hmm. You can't really put a price on that, but you can to a certain extent. Like, yeah. You know, if you're doing a private gig, how much you need for yourself to get around. And if you're doing a gig that's maybe a friend show, you might charge a little less.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's for the art and the atmosphere and the people you're going to be working with.
Mm-hmm. So what? So could you? Do you have like a, aside from like your transportation, and like what it costs for the actual art piece? So like, what's an example of a price range that someone who's new needs to start thinking of? Or could start thinking of, because that's one of our issues. Is like a lot of the time, I myself as an artist, I started performing full sets for like $20, you know, because I didn't have an understanding that no, I have to invest 40-80 hours to study my poems. That doesn't even include the amount of time it took me to write the poems, to decide which poems I'm gonna be doing, to decide what I'm gonna be wearing, you know, like you said, my transportation to get there. I've been in a situation where I had to take public transportation to a place, but the bus ended, maybe the line ended, took me to a certain position, but I had to walk for almost an hour.
Now that affected your performance?
Not really. I still gave an excellent performance, but it definitely was like I was not happy having to walk that distance in the night on kind of a highway type of deal. So, you know, like one's own, how does one put a price to one's creativity?
Well, with burlesque, like, this is a package deal you're getting. You're getting me fully packaged. My makeup, my hair, or whatever I'm doing, my costume, my body, my look. If I'm, like, walking a mile before I'm getting to you, I'm not going to look right. You're not going to be happy with it, and neither am I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, you know, that's the thing about, like, I don't think people realize sometimes that performers don't just arrive, like they're not in one little box, you know, it takes time. It takes work to get that through. You're only going to be dancing for 3 to 5 minutes, but the amount of work that it took to look like that and prep your stuff and, I don't know, steam your dress, mm-hmm. do your wing liner, put those eyelashes on, which costs money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you got to add those things up.
It's like,
and if it don't add up,
yeah.
Like if it, this was my full time job.
Yeah,
I definitely was like, that helped me a lot
mm-hmm.
to know what to ask for. You know.
Yeah.
But it's not my full time job anymore. But I still have the knowledge, and like, if I don't feel like doing something, I just don't do it.
Yeah. It's kind of like what Usain Bolt said, right? He had to train for 4 years to run for 9 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those 4 years, he had bills, he had to pay his coaches. You know, even if he wasn't paying his coaches out of pocket, you know, somebody was paying his coaches. He had to eat. He had to get physio. A lot of people don't know that that Usain Bolt had severe scoliosis. His spine was completely twisted, and it actually in the early years of him running as a teen, it affected his gait and the way that he moved, and he was still dusting people out, you know. And he traveled to Germany in order to get all kinds of physiotherapy. I don't know if he did surgeries, but he definitely did a lot of physiotherapy, a lot of work. So all of that so that he could break world records. So
yes,
we got to keep that kind of thing in mind. It's like, I've been performing since I was a kid, but professionally, I can say 25, 26 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those 26 years, I tell people I have a PhD in poetry. I don't have a piece of paper that's saying it, but I have a PhD in poetry. Like, if you say, hey, Kim, I'm giving you three words and a theme, and I want you to write a poem, you're going to get a poem within maybe half an hour to an hour, and it's going to be dope.
Yes.
You know? But then you want to tell me, oh, I want to pay you $50 for that? Nah. Get out of here with that. I almost want to be like Pablo Picasso. It's going to cost you $50,000 for me to draw, write a poem on a napkin. Because that's what you've heard the story of Pablo Picasso, right? And a lady asked him to draw something on a napkin, and he was like, yeah, this is $5,000 or 5,000 euros or whatever, wherever he was at the time. And she was like, that took me, but that only took you 5 minutes. And he was like, no, it actually took me 20 years of my life to be able to do that in 5 minutes.
That's right.
And that's another thing that I tell artists, like, all of the times that you went to school, all of the times that you performed for free, those are your training grounds. All of that is your training ground. You know, the time that you spend rehearsing, you have to charge for that time. You have to like think bigger picture. You're not just arriving and performing. There's a whole process before you even start negotiating your contract, or before that person even came to you and said, hey, I'd like you to come and perform. You've been preparing for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that all costs money. You know, if you just want to talk about food,
yeah. You know,
just food so you can get up in the morning and do what you have to do. That's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars that you've invested in making sure that you can get up in the morning and have the fuel in your body to do what you want to do. And people...
Yes.
We don't take that into account because we just, oh, I'm an artist. How do I get a price tag to it?
That's why I'm always seeing these things online. That's why. Because it gets very frustrating.
Yeah.
I feel like over the years that it started to get more and more, like, tight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's because there's more performers, but just because there's more doesn't mean everybody's at the same level. It doesn't mean that, you know? So, knowing your worth.
100%. 100%. What is some advice that you could, just general advice that you could give to young burlesque performers out there?
Trust your vision. Practice. Take video of yourself. Look at yourself. Be kind, you know, have fun.
Mm. Yeah.
Ask questions, get stuff in writing.
I remember the first time somebody told me, oh no, I don't have to write that down. I was like,
We gonna write it down in the email so that when you start lying, I can go back and pull that email up.
These are our original receipts. You know, when people are like, oh, you coming with the receipts? We've been coming with the receipts. Receipts have been contracts.
Also, if you create an act, take pictures, get video, I cannot stress this enough for nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lost an act. But
how
I have
mean?
No record of that act.
Oh, not like you performed an act and then...
Someone else took it, yes.
Oh, someone stole
and
it.
I see it all the time. And I regret not doing something about it sooner.
Okay.
And it's like, I gotta let it go. But that's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't believe in myself enough to stand up for myself when it happened.
Right. So it's very similar to what we were talking about in the break. We mentioned Cat Williams, who started off the new year with a bang, and he was talking about, you know, Cedric the Entertainer, Steve Harvey, who have stolen other artists' material and gone on to make a lot of money off of that material. Mm-hmm. So I'm this sure happens that even act, in burlesque.
Made money. I see that act making money. But what can I do? I mean, there's plenty more where that came from.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, take more ownership of your stuff.
And so is it that the best way to secure your own acts is to record them on video?
I think that's the best way to do that.
And how do you, well, I guess it's on digital, so you'll have a digital date on it.
Yes.
In order to be like, okay, you started performing on January 15th, and I recorded this January 15th, 2024, but I recorded this in 2023, and this is the timestamp on it.
That's right.
And I know that you were at that show that I did, because boop, here's the flyer, and your name is right there.
You were in the cast when I did that act.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a love-hate relationship with that, because it's like, I want to believe that everybody is good, inherently good. But the truth of the matter is, we got some devious people out there.
They're just selfish and immature and sad. And I work on my forgiveness every single day.
Mm.
Every day.
Mia V. Prizer, thank you so much for coming and sharing with us. Happy New Year. And
Happy New Year.
Thank you. And please let people know where they can find you, where they can get in touch with you if they want to learn more about your work, about your art. Maybe we'll have someone who's listening who wants to bring you up to Montreal as a feature burlesque performer. I know I'd be right there in the audience if I'm not on stage, if I'm not the one hosting. So let people know how to get in touch with you, please.
Well, you can find me at my website at catcult.com, 2 C's. And I perform regularly at Bathtub Gin, and I'm returning to Duane Park in the spring.
What is Park?
Duane Park in New York City.
Okay. All right.
But I want to come to Montreal. Let me know.
Yeah. We're going to figure it out. So there you have it. We have been speaking to Mia V. Prizer, who is a New York City-based artist, producer, model, burlesque performer, and breast cancer survivor. And she's been performing and producing professionally since 2011. Just so you know, I've got things coming up. I am currently in rehearsal for a play called Dominoes at the Crossroads. So that's going to be coming out in March. And I also have another Inside the Mad Poetic Studio that's going to be at Mainline Theater on February 11th. So I hope y'all will come out. Go to www.mainlinetheater.ca. And other than that, thank you for listening. Tune back in next week, Tuesday. And you've been listening to Soul Perspectives. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this is CKUT 90.3 FM.
Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have 2 phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside. No woman, no cry.
no woman, no cry. I remember when we used to sit in a government yard in Trenchtown, overhauled by serving the hypocrites, mingle with the good people we meet. Good friends we are and good friends we've lost along the way. In this great future, you can't forget your past. So dry your teeth, I say.
Drop a check on you. Chopper make a nigga lean on you. Shot your meds and made them bleed on you. Bust the chopper, make a sneeze. I too mad to the street, say yes I do. I fell in love with my chopper. I had a shootout with the coppers. I'm gon' slide around with my shotter. I'm a menace and a robber. Voodoo, put a hex on you. 2-3 in a tech, 2-2. Young nigga who would step on you. Young nigga drop a check on you. Chopper make a nigga lean on you. Shot your meds and made them bleed on you. Bust a chopper, make a sneeze. I too mad to the street, say yes I do. I'm getting higher than the ceiling. I'm off these perks so I can't feel shit. I'm so quick to fucking kill shit. I'm a robber. I ain't gon' stop until we through. I just hope y'all knew. All my money, no, is new. All my honeys, no, they blue. Red bottoms up on his shoes. I'm dripping goo. I fell in love with my chopper. I had a shootout with the coppers. I'm gon' slide around with my shotter. I'm a menace and a robber. Voodoo, put a hex on you. 2-3 and a tech, 2-2. Young nigga who would step on you. Young nigga drop a check on you. Chopper make a nigga lean on you. Shot your meds and made them bleed on you. Bust a chopper, make a sneeze. I too mad to the street, say yes I do. I fell in love.
You get the concept, then watch out for them hyenas. Watch out, and you go, watch out, but never watch out. Look around and all the places you go to. Stand your ground and stay solid like Ogun. Watch your back and just do what you're supposed to. Take care of family and people you're close to. Then they did their best, you go learn your own lesson. Everybody keep on searching for miraculous blessings. You go back for the gospel. If you don't know yourself, you go lost you. If you get money, you be blessed you. I'm a nobody, holy, no apostle, no. Nobody go rest you. My battle begin you. Nobody go rest you. Nobody go rest you. Your tongue go confess you. Your head go correct you. You know go forget you. So you get the concept. Then go tell you watch out, you nigga. Watch out,
but yeah. I don't usually do this, but saying to you.
De ton ami qui saignait du nez après qu'il soit rentré dans une porte patio fermée, sans rire de lui?
Évidemment.
Avec ton empathie, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
GemArt Center is pleased to present When Big Man Talk, the exhibit. Come experience a captivating fusion of paintings, photography, an immersive virtual reality experience and more. To kick off the exhibit, Jam Arts is presenting the film African Redemption, The Life and Legacy of Marcus Garvey, screening January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. Then experience When Big Man Talk, the exhibit, from February 3 to 10 at Galerie Lucie Michel, and after that from February 11 to 14 at the UNIA. For tickets, call 438-507-9258. Or head to jam-montreal.com and click Jam Arts Center.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marcaro pe 90,3 FM CKUT.